SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number three, live right here on this Thursday on the Early Line on Sports Grid and all across that Spiz Grizz network. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. In this third hour, there is a ton to get to. A preview of the shorter slate on this Thursday in Major League Baseball, but some fun matchups to break down. And then we've got some conference finals playoff action as well. Game two tonight in Boston inside TD Garden between the Celtics and the Pacers. Game number one of the Western Conference Finals in the Stanley Cup postseason in Dallas between the Stars and the Oilers. Pete Jensen will join us later in this hour from the NHL to look at everything you need to know as we have one more stop before the Stanley Cup final in the chase for the cup. So much DRS in this third and final hour.
And how about this? The Charles Schwab Challenge already underway currently right now on Colonial Golf Course with my man Mr. Harmon at minus three through four holes here. We'll see if Scottie Scheffler can do some damage and get back in the win column as well. But a big hour number three underway, and also sporting landscape here under. I feel like we are like a golf show now after last week's Friday appearance where we had the legendary run with Scottie Scheffler. What, an like hour and a half live coverage? Nobody does it better here. So Charles Schwab Challenge, we're in on that as well.
Listen, there's great golf coverage across this network for Elk Coast to Coast. You'll see our guy, Keith Stewart, and of course, each and every morning, the Smiley Show. Smiley Kaufman, former PGA Tour winner, and his producer and co-host, our guy, Charlie Hulme. Each and every day, there is golf coverage here on the Sports Grid Network. We give you a little bit of NBA coverage as well because we want to hear from the people. Dallas goes into Minneapolis last night, takes game number one on the road of the WCF. 108-105, the Mavs winning outright as a 4.5-point underdog. Dallas, now the favorite to win the West outright after being the series underdog entering last night's opening game. Has it changed your assessment? Not me or Donnie, your assessment of who's going to win the Western Conference Championship? That was the question in Fade the Public. At Sports Grid on Twitter, who will win the Western Conference Finals? Your two options, of course, the Mavericks or the Timberwolves. In about 54%, 53.7 to be specific, of the public vote, going with the Dallas Mavericks after the Mavs won game number one in the Twin Cities outright as an underdog, and it flipped to the series outright favorite at a minus 164 number. The public is back in the Mavs to win the Western Conference.
Yeah, and quite frankly, they probably should at this point because you already know what happened last night, which means that the Mavericks now have home court advantage, one up 1-0 here against the Timberwolves, with a chance to go 2-0 up and see if they can win this series in five or six games to sort of end it early. But Ben and I under the notion this is going to be a long series here, and I still have a lot of faith in the Minnesota Timberwolves. I also said last night I thought the Mavericks were the better side. Give me the 4.5 points. They won outright. And now in game number two coming up, I think the Timberwolves do even this series. So I went ahead and I voted for the Timberwolves here through over 100 votes, 46%. So I'm in the minority right here. So technically, I am fading the public because I still think the Timberwolves are going to win this series.
As do I. Listen, I really do believe, and I didn't have a thought on who wins this series entering game number one. What you might say is chicken, you know what, Ben. Have a pick here. Have some confidence. I don't really know who's going to win the Western Conference outright. I had tickets on both the Nuggets and the Thunder. So what do I really know about the Western Conference at this juncture? But what I did feel confident about was betting the over of the series over-under in terms of total games, 5.5. The over had the juice. And that does not change because the Mavericks won a game on the road in Minneapolis. I did the T-Wolves even this series at one game apiece before we get to Dallas for game number three. I think they split in Texas as well. and we'd have a best of three, forcing at least six games, which I still believe in. Who wins in six, or more than likely, in my estimation, seven? I'm not entirely sure. But my best bet now with the updated series numbers is not Minnesota outright to win the series. We're back in the Mavericks now as the favorites. It's Minnesota plus a game and a half at minus 114 on the series spread. I bet it first thing on this Thursday morning because, again, I think it gives you the potential of a few outcomes. Minnesota to win the series outright, or the Timberwolves to get into a game seven and even lose at home to Dallas. As long as the Mavericks do not win in six games or fewer, which I still think is unlikely, Minnesota cashes that series spread now as the underdog. That's how I would play it.
Yeah, I could see it going that way. Me, I'll probably still take the plus money because I do think the Wolves are going to win it, and it does get to seven. I like my chances of the Wolves being 4 to 5 point favorites here on their home court. Now, granted, we also saw last series the Timberwolves go on the road in game number seven and pick up a victory. Now, this time, it would be in their own building. I think that goes a long way. But also, again, looking at the way the public did vote here, sometimes it is paint by numbers. Hey, you're telling me I can have the Mavericks here that have home court advantage and a 1-0 series lead before game number two? Yeah, you'll probably vote that way based on even money because the polls technically are even money. We're not asking you to lay a number today with that money if you think the Mavericks, will win this series. So for my money, I'm still going Timberwolves. I trust them here. And also, if we're looking just at game one, for a quick synopsis of that, my superstars, talking about the Timberwolves, didn't play all that well. Probably should have won the game late, turned the basketball over, didn't. Credit the Mavericks for winning that game. But I expect much better performances from my superstars in game two moving forward here for the Timberwolves. And you saw the Mavericks with their superstars, Ben, combined for over 60 points between the two. Let's see if they can do that again and replicate it, or do the Timberwolves rescue home court and say, okay, at least we're even heading back to Dallas.
So here's a funny thing that I think when you read the two game two lines for the two conference finals matchups that we had. Boston tested to the ultimate brink, escaping with an overtime victory over the Pacers. Okay, the Pacers might not just be walked over in this series. No longer a double-digit dog. Boston's now only laying nine for game number two. Minnesota loses game one on its home floor. Maybe the Mavericks are the better side, the rightful series favorites. Yeah. Minnesota's a 5-point favorite for game number two. They're a stronger favorite than game number one. It's the largest spread in favor of the Timberwolves throughout this playoff run that has reached the WCF for Minnesota. So the public likes the Mavericks. I am interested to see what the public betting is going to look like for game number two tomorrow night in the Twin Cities. And maybe that should tell you something, that Minnesota, despite what the public is saying, is going to be in this series and still has a great shot of winning the West.
Yeah, let me take a look here at the FanDuel Sportsbook to see. Betting statistics, we already have those out. And 64% of those spread bets already with that 5-point number going towards the Dallas Mavericks. So the public certainly liking the Pacers as dogs tonight, and then the Dallas Mavericks once again as dogs as we move forward in the Western Conference Finals. But as I click on more wagers here, the price point I want to get to take a look at is Anthony Edwards. 26.5 is his points prop. Now hear me out. Last two games hasn't been all that efficient, hasn't hit big numbers here. But if you're looking for a game and a correlation, if you think the Timberwolves win game number two, it's because Anthony Edwards probably had a bounce back performance. But there's still a chance that Anthony Edwards can have that bounce back performance and you still get the win and not cover the line. I think I might be liking the Edwards 26.5 even better now than laying the 5 points, even though I do think the Timberwolves will win, because I think that direct correlation means Edwards sooner than later is going to be dropping that 30 plus points here. And I think he does it in game number two.
Listen, we said it early on. Jaden McDaniels has been incredible in this playoff run for the T-Wolves. Anthony Edwards joked about it back during the All-Star break in the middle of February. We got Jaden McDaniels, and it's great for McDaniels to be a key and significant contribution as a role player. But if Anthony Edwards is not your leading scorer, and Karl Anthony Towns is not your leading scorer, and those two guys are not leading the way for your team, you're not winning the Western Conference. So I'm a little bit spurned, but I'll maybe get back on the horse with you tomorrow night, DRS, and go over 26.5 for the Ant-Man. Yeah. His points prop for game one actually closed at 28 and a hook. Got a good number for the best bet. Did not come through. 6 of 16 from the floor. 12 of the 16 field goal attempts from deep. 5 of the made 6 from 3. That's great. Keep shooting the 3, but also get to the cup, Anthony. Craig Mish joins us up next to go around Major League Baseball.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
8-game slate on this Thursday around Major League Baseball. Some nasty weather out on the East Coast. Hopefully we get all of these games in, even if they are slightly delayed. So to help us get ready for this Thursday, with 6 games as of now scheduled for some day baseball, that's Craig Mish, the host of Newswire, starting at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Our MLB insider here on the Sports Grid Network, the daily basis. Craig, on this Thursday, glad to have you here.
Yeah, great start yesterday, as we talked about. Cole Reagan shut down the Tigers. I think the Tigers got to, like, do something evasive here with this offense. Like, it is in the American League pretty dreadful at this point to watch. But that was a great game to watch. Unfortunately, Skubal didn't come through for Detroit. But naturally, we were on the right side yesterday of that.
Mm. Oh, always on the right side here on the early line. 6 great wins, Craig. For KC, the Royals already at 32. It took them until the end of July to get to 30 wins. Craig Mish, in his crystal ball, knows how to predict those win totals. Craig, a ceremonious day on this Thursday in Major League Baseball. For the third time in Major League Baseball history, it's Paul Skeens Day. Skeens on the bump at home in Pittsburgh as the Pirates get ready to host the San Francisco Giants. Third start of Skeens' MLB career. The first against a team not named the Chicago Cubs.
Right.
In Pittsburgh, the favored side with Paul Skeens on the bump against San Francisco today. What do you expect in outing number 3 of Paul Skeens' MLB career?
Yeah, the last one was incredible. Like, watching what he did carving up that team in the last one, you know, certainly, I mean, I guess the thing is for me is that Skeens, I would think, would be treated a little bit differently than some of these other pitchers getting to the big leagues, only because he played at LSU, you know, and threw so many pitches. I'm sort of surprised the way that he's being handled a little bit. Maybe the Pirates feel like they have a run coming in them and they would make the postseason potentially. And if that's the case, you want to have him hang around along with Jared Jones for a great 1-2 punch down the stretch. But it is sort of maddening to me to look at his props, his K props, and even to win some of these games, knowing, Ben, that he's coming out after the 6th inning. Like, it's just, that's it. And again, think about how well he pitched to get through 6 innings and they let him do it. He may only be a 5-inning guy. I can't back the Pirates today. I just can't do it. I don't think he's going to go deep enough into the game.
Yeah, I was live on the air during that game against the Cubs, and he was filthy. Like, every time you looked up and you saw another out, you didn't even think about it was a ground. I was like, yeah, he probably struck the guy out, and he did. 6 innings pitched, 11 Ks. He was phenomenal. Let's see what he does do today. The one thing that we do know, a guy that's been phenomenal at the top of the Cy Young Award-winning market here at the FanDuel Sportsbook, that's Zach Wheeler and the Philadelphia Phillies taking on Andrew Heaney, the left-handed pitcher for the Rangers. Heavy favorite here, but we see some overnight movement. A minus 210 for the Phillies, now down to a minus 190 and a total of 8.5. The Phillies have been sensational this year. Do they pull off the sweep against the Rangers in Philadelphia today, Craig?
Yeah, I got a quick look at the Phillies lineup. I think they announced a couple of guys are sitting today. I think maybe, Donnie, that's why the line moved a little bit. But look, naturally, the Phillies are playing better baseball than anyone else. I still find it a little fascinating that Imanaga is not the favorite to win the Cy Young. And I guess I would ask myself the question that if Imanaga was in his second year of Major League Baseball, would he be the favorite right now? Is it just simply because he's going to wrap up the Rookie of the Year award and they're not going to give him the Cy Young award too? I mean, is that the reason why? Because otherwise, I can't figure it out. That being said, Wheeler's had one bad start all season. Donnie, I saw it. It was against Miami. Yep. I don't know what happened in that game. I still can't figure it out. I would lean under the 8.5 runs. You know, certainly Texas's pitching leaves a little bit to be desired, but I would think that Wheeler comes through. And generally speaking, the one thing that you could say about the Phillies this year, and Donnie, you know this from watching, is every single one of their starters is going 7-8 innings. That's going to help them so much with this bullpen down the stretch. You have no idea.
Yeah, by the way, real quick, Ben. Oh,
Let me slide on this real quick with you, Craig. I agree with you. And you saw an interesting one down in Florida when you had Wheeler have that start. It's like, boy, that's odd. Stubbs actually was the starting catcher that day because Realmuto got banged up a little bit the night before.
Right.
He got back on his bases last week. And also, usually on a day-to-day where you play a night game, which they did in Philadelphia in a day game, you give the starting catcher the day off. But Realmuto is actually in the lineup today. So that might be a little bit of an extra boost for Wheeler there. But you did see one of those games where he didn't have his normal catcher, and he looked really bad that game.
Yeah, there was another, by the way, there was one pitch in particular. He had a, and again, I watched the Marlins, you know, sorry to say, I watched like every game. So there was like a 3-2 count, and Wheeler thought he got a strike. It was a ball. The next batter, actually it was a three. I don't know what it was, but either way, the umpire missed a strike, and the very next pitch was a home run. And I think that really was what cost Wheeler on in that game. I'm not going to make excuses for him because I don't with the umpires, but I think that was part of it too. Yeah. That's a good point, Donnie. I don't know the catching dynamic there, how it works, who Wheeler generally is with.
That was a sound follow-up DRS. Way to get in there about your Philadelphia Phillies. Craig, the question we've been asking about the Phils, 36-14, the best 50-game start in MLB in over two decades. How legitimate is Philadelphia as a pennant contender in the National League? All year long, it's been the Dodgers and the Braves slightly behind the Phils and then everybody else in the National League. Craig, would you place Philadelphia on the same tier with the Dodgers and the Braves?
With the Braves, yes. With the Dodgers, I'm not sure. I kind of feel like Ohtani is putting the Dodgers over the top this year. If I had to predict how far the Phillies go, I know Donnie's not going to want to hear this. I think it's very similar to last year. I think that they get to the NLCS, and I'm just not sure what would happen. But look, if I am the Phillies this year, and I am Dave Dombrowski, who has a lot of history going to the World Series with Detroit and with Boston and with the old Marlins, the Florida Marlins, this is the year, Donnie. They got to do it. They have to get whatever they can, whether it's Mike Trout or whether it's Bo Bichette or Vladimir Guerrero. They have to go all in this year. The window is now for them. They got to push it all the way down if I'm them.
Now, Craig, is there any chance that we can get you to head to Twitter right now and just say we're hearing rumors that the Phillies could be lining up something big? Let's go.
Craig, you just gave him an inch. He's going to take a mile. You just opened the door and right side's kicking it down. You just gave him his sources that Mike Trout's coming home.
I saw Donnie's chair. It was weird. I saw Donnie's chair just, you know, sort of rise a little bit like he was, you know.
Perked up a little bit, did DRS. As soon as you said Mike Trout, Craig, we knew that was going to be good. Clip that. Make sure it's shared, Craig Mish. Yep. More early on next.
Yep, there it is. Yeah. It's going right now.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Breaking news here on this Thursday on the early line on Sports Grid, as was maybe expected in the NBA after the Cavaliers were bounced in five games from the second round. Cleveland has made a change in its head coaching position. The Cavs have fired J.B. Bickerstaff as of this Thursday morning. A new head man in the land. We'll see what it means for bringing back a roster that includes Donovan Mitchell.
And also, we upset with the way he performed in the playoffs without half of his team against maybe the best team in the NBA. It was his fault.
Right.
Forget about the season. Ben, you always hear me tell this, specifically in the NBA. You're hired to be fired, and we get that. You also saw at the end of the season, the owner, Dan Gilbert, of the Cleveland Cavaliers, stepped in and goes, yeah, I'm going to be much more involved this offseason, which only meant one thing. I don't want to lose Donovan Mitchell at this point. And whatever he wants, we'll make that change. Now, granted, if Donovan Mitchell didn't like even in the slightest J.B. Bickerstaff, you knew who was going to lose that battle. Not the superstar player. It was going to be the coach here. So I actually moved the odds for Donovan Mitchell staying a little bit better than what they were just a day ago with this news. And also, if the owner is stepping in, that means he's trying to appease superstar players, not the actual front office and or basketball staff.
Yeah, DRS, one of my favorite things about the NBA offseason that can start immediately for a team, even if they are bounced from the second round of the playoffs, is as soon as that season ends, you get reports about dysfunction within the locker room, how star players wanted something else, so on and so forth. And those came out last week as soon as Boston won Game 5 in a game in which Donovan Mitchell, Caris LeVert, and Jarrett Allen did not play, and the Cavs lost by 15 but did cover as a 16-point underdog. Now, J.B. Bickerstaff in the last 2 years has brought Cleveland to the postseason in the 2 years that Spida has been with the Cavaliers. They won nearly 100 games in the regular season, 99 to be in fact, and yet were bounced in the opening round of the playoffs by the Knicks 2 years ago, here in the second round by the Boston Celtics. Incredibly shorthanded this time around, never reaching that ceiling potentially with the Cavs, but did the Cavaliers really have much higher of a ceiling than a second-round playoff appearance in the Eastern Conference? I'm not so sure. Our guy Shams Charania on FanDuel TV reporting that Kenny Atkinson, Warriors assistant, is maybe in line, or at least is a candidate at this moment. My producer, Joe Friso, texting me other things that get rid of texts that actually have pertinent information. Quickly here, DRS, let's transition back to Major League Baseball to go through our eight-game Thursday slate. We've got a couple more to preview, including the rubber match in Wrigley between the Cubs and the Braves. Chicago won game number one. Atlanta, of course, with a nine-run performance yesterday, winning 9-2. The Braves have been favored in each of the first two games inside Wrigley. Same story today, minus 118 on the money line for Atlanta.
I think we might get runs in this game again, because if we're taking a look at the 78 degrees, which is nice in Chicago, wind's not really going to help you all that much, blowing more from right foul pole over to left foul pole. But if we're taking a look at the pitchers, and here's always some times where I like to break down a game and say, I don't have enough information. Darius Vines only faced 41 batters here in Major League Baseball this season, none of the past 30 days. He's got some pretty brutal numbers, man. 184 ISO power number and a weighted on-base percentage of 358. So let's go back to see what he was actually doing in AAA. His last start, Ben, in AAA, which came against St. Louis's affiliate, 4 2/3 innings pitched, over 25 batters faced, 8 hits, 6 earned runs, 2 home runs, and 3 walks giving up with only 4 strikeouts. So if there's a chance for the Chicago Cubs to bounce back today, it's going to come from the first 4 guys in that lineup. It's Talkman, Suzuki, Bellinger, and Morel. Those guys all elevated ISO and weighted on base percentages against a pitcher that might not technically be a major league pitcher today. So maybe I'll lean on that aspect here. I think the Braves might go down today. But more than that, I like the total in this game to go to the over.
I like a couple of the underdogs in the early slate. I kind of like the Giants plus 150 in Pittsburgh, despite Paul Skenes being on the bump, and the Cubbies at even money makes some sense. Chicago, of course, in the National League Central, the team in the bottom of that division, the Cincinnati Reds. Disappointing start to the year in Cincy, 20-29, a near pick-up today at home in the Great American Ballpark against the Padres.
Yeah, I mean, not a great look overall, and that's why you're seeing that basically it is a coin flip. The 9.5 is interesting here because Waldron's not a good pitcher. But having said that, he's really bad, Ben, against left-handed batters. You don't have that good of left-handed batters in the lineup today for the Cincinnati Reds. Frankie Montas hasn't been that great against left-handed batters. You do have one really good left-handed batter in that lineup, and that's Jake Cronenworth, 73 over the past 30 days against righties at 3.28 ISO. Maybe that's your RBI look today for the Padres and the Reds.
With a win for San Diego, they would be a game above 500, the only other team in the NL West outside of the Dodgers to have a winning record. NHL talk next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ice advice with Pete Jensen from the NHL ahead of game number one of the Western Conference Finals in the Stanley Cup postseason tonight in Dallas between the Stars and Donnies, Oilers, and of course recapping game number one inside the Mecca last night between the Rangers and the Florida Panthers in the Eastern Conference Finals. Pete, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you for being here on this Thursday as the chase for the Cup continues.
Always great to be on with you guys. Yeah, I know the Knicks bowed out, so this is the Rangers' time to shine at MSG, but they didn't get the job done yesterday. So a little facing an uphill battle here the rest of the series, maybe.
No, they certainly did not get the job done yesterday. In fact, they were blanked. Florida takes game number one of the ECF with a 3-0 shutout over the New York Rangers. Sergei Bobrovsky for Florida, sensational in net. for the Panthers. Pete, when you look back at game number one of the Eastern Conference Finals, just how exactly was Florida able to be so dominant on the road inside MSG?
Well, they played a cleaned-up version of what Carolina does, dominate the possession, outshooting their opponent. One crazy stat I saw yesterday is the Rangers have been outshot in 9 straight playoff games. That's not a recipe for continued success. They have to make some adjustments there. But certainly the possession dominance, better goaltending than what Carolina had and what Sergei Bobrovsky did with the shutout. He's a Conn Smythe Trophy candidate, as are a couple of different guys on the Florida Panthers. But I think Florida is just a little bit deeper and more robust version of Carolina, and that could mean problems moving forward for the Rangers, who are not a good possession team, generally speaking.
We came into this series as the Panthers here being the favorite side, handled their business in game number one. If you're just scoreboard watching right now, Pete, and you said, wow, look at that. The Panthers, a 3-0 win in game number one. What an easy breeze. It wasn't the case here. It was 1-0 after the first period. You saw the own goal by Lafreniere late in that game and then an empty netter sort of to set the tide for that 3-goal space. If we look for game number two and the series moving forward, what do the Rangers need to do to get back in this series? Obviously, we know they need to win games. But what can they change from game one to game two that you feel could help them out?
Well, they've been playing from behind a lot this season. They have the most comeback victories in the entire NHL in the regular season. We all know, right, Carolina regained control of that series in game six. And then the Rangers and Chris Kreider pulled a rabbit out of a hat and stunned them in their own building. The Rangers are a good road team. They can fall back on that. Even if, like, in the series against the Devils, I think last year, right, they trailed that series 0-2 going back to Jersey, and they are, you know, and they were able to win road games to get themselves back into it. The problem is when you play that style and you don't have the possession in your favor and you rely on the power play, you really have to convert on the power play late, you know, in the third period. They were buzzing for the first time in the whole game. They got a power play and they didn't do very much with it. So you have to make the most of those opportunities if you're the Rangers, because you're not always going to get power plays in tight checking playoff games, high pressure situations.
Pete, before, despite the Panthers being the favorites to win this series outright, many people expected this to be competitive, maybe even go the full duration of 7 games. With Florida taking game number one in Madison Square Garden, has it changed your outlook at all on how long you think this series goes?
I mean, maybe if Florida wins the series, it could go shorter than I thought it would. I was leaning Rangers in 6 because of the home ice and the fact that, you know, traditionally they have had a lot of blue shirts in the building down in Florida, and Florida has looked a little shaky at points this postseason, even though they beat the Lightning in 5. If that game 2 overtime game goes a different bounce in, you know, Kucherov's way or Stamkos's way, we would have been talking about a lengthy series. And they, I think they struggled to close out the Boston Bruins as well in that series, dropping a couple of home games. So it doesn't change my view too much. I still think the Rangers have a great chance to win this series. And maybe it's an opportunity where this team that was, you know, arguably disrespected in the odds market as the 4th team out of 4 entering the postseason, you could get a slightly longer number on them as of now after dropping game one at home.
Pete, let's get out to the Western Conference here from the Lone Star State. The Dallas Stars going to take on the Edmonton Oilers in this one. The total for this game listed at 6.5, which I love because it means we're going to get some wide open action, at least we think. Also a slight favorite in game number one here for Dallas and a slight favorite in the series. Let's get a nice little series preview of what we can anticipate between Edmonton and Dallas here, Pete.
Right. I haven't been overly impressed by the Oilers. They barely closed out. You remember, guys, I was talking about them being a possible cup champion all year. Mm-hmm. I'm backing off that a little bit because they barely beat Vancouver in game 7. They did it on the road, which give them credit for. But if that game was another minute or two longer, Vancouver may have still tied it. They didn't have Thatcher Demko in the whole series, and Brock Besser was out for game 7. So I was a little surprised that Edmonton, that it was so dicey in that series against an undermanned Canucks team. Dallas has to clean up its play at home. They're only 3-4 at home this postseason, despite some raucous environments down there in Texas. And I'm just looking for them to finally win a game one here. I mean, they have to step up and stop trailing in these series. They lost both game ones in the first round. I think with Edmonton, this could be a puck line situation. Dallas, I wanted to note, three of their four victories against the great Avalanche star power team in the second round, three of them out of the four came by multiple goals. So that's a good note.
Pete, Donnie's hoping that you are correct about Edmonton keeping this game close tonight, because in this Western Conference Finals, he's no longer Donnie Wrightside. With all of his cheering that has happened for the Oilers, he has proclaimed himself Donnie Dreisaitl, named after his favorite Oiler, Leon Dreisaitl, getting ready for this series. Donnie is with Edmonton the entire way in the Western Conference Finals. Donnie, do you like the new lower third? Take a moment, look at it, note that it says Donnie Dreisaitl. Fantastic.
That is beautiful. That's beautiful. That That's needs good. To stay here for as long as Edmonton is still in the cup race here. So let's get after it. Donnie Dreisaitl, let's go. New handle.
So, Pete, as we look at the game one odds, you saw Dallas a slight home ice favorite minus 128. The numbers for game one look a lot like the numbers for the series outright here in the Western Conference Finals, minus 126, that outright price in favor of Dallas. What do you think will be the key matchup that continues to emerge throughout the WCF?
It's got to be the goaltending. Big advantage for Dallas with Jake Oettinger compared to the duo of Stuart Skinner and Calvin Pickard. You look at team save percentage, it's 913 for Dallas this postseason, 888, so sub 900 for the Oilers. That could be a problem the deeper they go in the playoffs. But yeah, I mean, Dreisaitl is where it's at right now. You can't even say anymore that if the Oilers win the cup, it'll definitely be McDavid. There are like three other guys on that team that are playing at a Conn Smythe Trophy level. Dreisaitl has outscored McDavid to this point in the playoffs. He's always a menace on the power play. Zach Hyman is leading the entire NHL in goals, so there's always a prayer when that happens. I think Jonathan Marchessault winning the Conn Smythe last year for Vegas was a great example of that. Yeah. And then also Evan Bouchard over the past two postseasons leads all defensemen with 37 points in 24 playoff games. So really impressive what these guys are doing, especially Leon.
So as we get ready for game number one of the Western Conference Finals tonight, we have seen a small favorite flip in terms of what things look like from the Stanley Cup overall outright odds. Florida now plus 160, the shortest we have seen on the Panthers. The Stars and the Oilers separated by only 40 cents, and the Rangers drop back to 6-1. But still, all four teams remaining in the hunt for Lord Stanley's Cup separated by less than $4.50. Pete Jensen from the NHL, we appreciate the time on this Thursday to get us set for game number one of the Western Conference Finals tonight in Dallas.
Great to be on with you guys. And yeah, I would argue that maybe Dallas is a little deeper than Florida. So that presents an opportunity right there. Two really strong teams, though, on paper that are looking like they're going to get to the cup final.
Back to the NBA playoffs next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Game number two of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight inside TD Garden between the Boston Celtics and the Indiana Pacers. Of course, game number one was an instant classic in Eastern Conference Finals playoff lore. We got a double bang out of Mike Breen. That does not often happen. We had an overtime thriller in which Boston emerges and maybe even escapes with a 133-128 victory, although Indiana did cover as a 10-point road underdog. A total of 222 at close on FanDuel DRS, skied over. But even in regulation, even if Jaylen Brown does not hit that game-tying three with six ticks remaining, 117-114 was over that number by nearly 10 points before we even got to the final 10 seconds. So we take all of that into our information for game number two. The Celtics now a 9-point home favorite in Beantown with a total of 225. Boston again, but a double-digit favorite in every single home game except for this one in the playoffs so far, in the total up by 3 points from game number one at 225. DRS, what's your assessment on those changing numbers ahead of game two?
And it probably should be that way, because the hardest game in the series for me, each and every series, is probably what? Game number one. We don't know what to anticipate. That's why we talked about heading in. I said I like the total, and I like the Boston team total more than the game itself. Could I see Boston winning in a blowout in game number one? Yes. Could I see Indiana getting close in game number one? Possibly. Could they cover the 10-point spread? Absolutely they did, and quite frankly, should have won that basketball game. Same thing we just talked about with Dallas and also Minnesota. I like Dallas coming in because I was sort of playing that, ooh, I wonder how that game seven is going to be, you know, taking the juice maybe out of the sails for Minnesota at home. And it did a little bit, and they won that basketball game. Game number two, yep. We saw these both two teams on the court. The general public right now is saying to themselves, wait a second, I just watched a game where I got 10 points and Indiana should have won. You're going to try that trick with me again? I'm not going to fall for it. So most of the betting public siding with Indiana, but I'm on the opposite side because I want to draw back on the first two series where I talk about the Boston Celtics saying, oh, this team really wants to play basketball now, does it? And they didn't even escape with a loss in game number one. They won that basketball game. So I look for a big performance out of the Boston Celtics in game number two. And also, the adjustment of the points is interesting because I'll tell you again, Ben, repeatedly, give me the overs early in the series, the unders a little bit later. That's a big-time adjustment. 3 or 4 points between one game and not any major, like, hey, Porzingis is coming back or Tatum's going to sit this one out, changes to the starting lineups. That's intriguing to me because 225 in a playoffs is still a decent amount to get to. So I'm not as in love with the total as I was in game number one, but I actually like the Celtics a little bit more. But if we just took a look, maybe points props in that location, I still think Tatum gets into the 30s. But if you're looking for a player from Indiana, I probably would focus a lot more on Pascal Siakam again in this game, getting into the 20s, which 21 points or more would cash in a ticket for him.
And we'll talk some props here in just a moment. But Donnie's point is very sound. From the changes that we are seeing in these numbers, 225 is a lofty total in NBA playoff basketball with a Celtics team that is much better on the defensive end of the floor than Indiana. Listen, the Pacers live up to their name. They play at a fast pace. They want to be up-tempo. They are the best offensive team throughout the regular season and now here in the postseason as well. Defense at times, not optional, but they're not great at that end of the floor. 225, though, is very, very large. Boston now, 9 playoff victories here in this postseason, out of their 11 games. Game one of the ECF, the only one decided by less than 7 points. 7 of the 9, still by 13 plus. 6 of the 9, Boston has covered in. This is the first game inside TD Garden, out of the 7, now to be 8 tonight, that we have seen for the Celtics in this postseason. They are not at least a double-digit favorite, and they've been a 13-plus point favorite in 5 of the previous 7. I'm laying the 9 with the Celtics. And as Donnie has brought up a few times here as well, we all kind of bake in a Boston dud at some point in their series. Often it's been game two. They lost to Miami by double digits in their opening round series when the Heat shot a franchise best 23 made three-pointers in that game. They lost by 24 to Cleveland in round number two as well. But they responded in those game threes, both on the road, winning by at least 13 points in covering as a lofty road favorite. Again, I thought this series would see Indiana win 2 games and make it a little bit more difficult than the odds makers expected for the Celtics. Somehow, some way, game number one has changed my mind. Not that Indiana is a better test than maybe we anticipated for the Celtics, but that was Indiana's best chance to make a statement in this series, and they coughed it up in the final 10 seconds of regulation.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't as if they, you know, the game was stolen from them. They just played so poorly in the final 10 seconds that they gave the basketball game away. Simple, hey, let's inbound the basketball. And if we do and catch the basketball, we win the basketball game. That's also tough because sometimes I talk about, Ben, forget about the X's and O's, the psyche of the team heading into this. Like, you are supposed to be heading to the arena tonight from an Indiana Pacers perspective with a 1-0 series lead. So, like, you know what? Let's handle the series right now and take this back 2-0. But you're heading into it like, man, we played one of our best basketball games and just handed it to the Celtics. We can't expect the Celtics to play that bad, let's just say, and us play that well and see what winds up in the end. The Celtics probably going to end up winning this game and moving on 2-0. So the fact of that is, how do you anticipate this game setting up in the first quarter alone? Is it the Celtics said, you got our attention, let's handle it, or the Pacers going, you know what, we know we should have won that basketball game, let's win in the first quarter. So for my money here, if you look at the first half wager,
The Pacers, if they're down 10 at the break, I don't know if they're coming back in this basketball game, but you know if the Pacers are up 10 at the break, there's no guarantee that they win and cover that basketball game. I do think you get a strong performance out of the Pacers, but if I'm betting it as a side, it's the Celtics for me. I'm going to fade the public, and I think you got the Celtics' attention,
yeah.
And I think they play much, much better in game number two here.
Boston, a 5.5-point favorite for what it is worth in the opening half tonight of game number two against the Pacers. We will get into the props on the other side of the break, and we'll give you some best bets for this night in the NBA and elsewhere on this Thursday in the sports landscape. Jason Tatum has the highest points prop. It's 30.5. Jaylen Brown has a higher number at 26 in a hook than anybody on Indiana as well. The Pacers have been incredibly balanced throughout the entirety of this season, but really with a focus here in the playoffs as well. Seven players for the Pacers scoring in double figures in game number one. A prop outlook for game two of the ECF up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The prop perspective for game number two inside TD Garden tonight of the Eastern Conference Finals. We start with the Celtics. Jason Tatum has scored 30-plus in three of the last four. In fact, more than just 30-plus over this prop of 30 and a hook in three of the last four games for Boston. Had not scored 30 in the postseason prior to these past four games. He has the highest points prop tonight of 30.5. Donnie, we talked about it earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. Because of overtime and just the high-scoring offensive affair of the opening game of the Eastern Conference Finals, pretty much wherever you look for the Celtics or the Pacers, if you wanted to bet a points prop to the over, you hit on Tuesday night. Where do you want to hit tonight with the props in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, taking a look for me, and I look at, and they're starting to upgrade this, and that is you take a look at Al Horford's 10.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, 2.5 three-point shots, where I believe in game number one, was it 1.5, like a minus 140 or minus 145 price? They're hip to the game here, because now it's over 2.5, but it is a plus 148. I still think that gets here, because in a game where we're not playing all that much defense, and we're expecting 225 as points in game number one, even though when the overtime did go over the total, I look for Al Horford again, until we see Kristaps Porzingis back. If I'm getting 35 minutes out of a guy that's going to be left alone at the three-point line, I like my chances here. If you tell me right now that I'm going to get 9 3-point shots or more out of Al Horford, I'll take the over 2.5 at a plus 148 price. But also, if you take a look at Jason Tatum, I just think the sky is the limit for the kid, right? 30 points tonight, not great defense. If he gets off to one of his games where I get 9 points in the first quarter, he's easily going over 30. So those are the two I like from a Celtics perspective. From an Indiana perspective, I just tipped my hand in the last segment. I like Pascal Siakam. Put it this way, Pascal Siakam doesn't get over 20.5 points. It's a wrap, and this is a 15-plus point win for the Boston Celtics.
20-plus points for Pascal Siakam in four straight games, the final three against the New York Knicks, 24 in game number one. The Pacers had a ton of balance and have throughout this postseason run. Seven players in double figures, all five starters and Obi Toppin and TJ McConnell off the bench for Indiana as well. So when you look at the Pacers, that's where you can really begin. Pascal Siakam, the highest points prop. Tyrese Haliburton, the team's leading scorer in game number one. Miles Turner, three made threes in game number one as well. His three-point prop here for game number two, as I track it down, is 1.5, and the over has the hefty juice at -122. If I was looking for some value on Indiana, it's what JY told us yesterday. Want to see where the prop is right now. 3.5. The assist prop for Pascal Siakam. The under actually has more juice. The over only at minus 105. Pascal Siakam, seven dimes in game number one. 12 rebounds as well for Siakam. He also had at least four assists in the last two games of that series against New York. Can be a primary ball handler at times. A good look at that 3.5 assist prop. So, on this Thursday, as we get you set for the Eastern Conference Finals, Game 2 in Boston, in the NBA playoffs, Western Conference Finals, Donnie's Edmonton Oilers in Dallas to take on the Stars, Game number 1 of the Western Conference Finals in the Stanley Cup postseason or Major League Baseball or anything else, we give you a best bet. Before we say farewell and goodbye, It is time for Bye Bye Bye. Donnie, what is the best bet on this Thursday? Please tell us.
We're going to go out to Oaktown here. Joey Estes on the mound today, the right-handed pitcher, hasn't fared too well this season. Only 40 batters he's faced. He's gotten detonated against left-handed batters. So we look right over to Ryan McMahon, a left-handed batter against right-handed pitching over the past 30 days. A 300 ISO power number and a weighted on-base percentage of 419. If we go back to minor league starts here for Estes in 2024, how about this? A 6 ERA and a FIP of 6.51. He'll get hit today. Ryan McMahon's going to get an RBI and a great price point of plus 165. For the Rockies player.
For a time, the Athletics were looking like not the worst team in Major League Baseball and still aren't, but they're 20-31. They've dropped 9 of their last 10. We're on an 8-game losing streak, I believe, entering this midweek set. For me, It's simple. I've said it a few times. Boston has not been a single-digit favorite in any of their home playoff games so far. None of the previous 7. I know they were tested in OT by Indiana in game number 1. I think Boston bounces back in a decisive way tonight. So you lay it less than 10 points, I'll lay it with Boston as a 9-point favorite in game number 2. That does it for this Thursday. Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. We're back on a Friday, 8 a.m. Eastern time. How excited is Donnie? Look at that face. And Donnie Dreisaitl might be even more excited if Edmonton wins game number 1. We'll talk to you tomorrow.